The Game Schooler Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, is a weekly audio show that highlights the educational value of tabletop gaming. In this week's episode, we'll cover Tenpenny Parks, our recommended game of the week, discuss resources for teaching board games in the School of Gaming, and wrap it up with our high five games that make us think of spring. Welcome to the Game Schooler Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Kotecki, along with my co-host, Dr. Michael McCabe. How's it going, Michael?
Great, Doug. You?
I am fantastic.
Good.
What have you acquired this week?
Well, I did get a few games. I got For Sale, which
you're, you're blowing that Lenten promise right out the window. It's over now, and you are... The floodgates have opened.
I have an allowance. I stayed well within my allowance. I know we have a convention coming up in a few weeks that I'm already saving up for. But I got For Sale and For Sale Autorama.
Both of them?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
For your car-loving friends in the...
Yeah, well, my oldest child requested the For Sale version. I asked you if you had the bookshelf or the travel version. Now, you told me you had the travel version, but that thing is like
No, I've got the bookshelf
version.
You have
the bookshelf. Yes, you do. So ours is a very small version of For Sale, but excited to play it. It has everything in it.
What does it do for coins on that? Is it the same?
Yeah, it's the exact same.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You just have to stuff them back in the little box.
That is a tight package.
How about you?
Package.
Did you acquire anything? I noticed you're giving me a hard time, but what's behind me there? About 8 feet of shelf space looks like it's taken up.
Yeah, the Kickstarter for Marvel United X-Men came in today. Two boxes, 25 pounds. It is immense. And this is one of them.
Wait. You need to restate that. Two boxes, 25 pounds?
Yes. It's a big box. But the thing about this game is, regardless, it's a great game. But even if I never played the game, the joy of painting the miniatures in that game is worth it to me.
The joy of having the boxes stored on a shelf and having them look at you every day is worth it?
It's
also that joy, added joy.
It's a little bit of stress.
That's awesome.
So that'll be a big time project coming up.
11 boxes. Am I counting that right?
Yeah, for the new one or just total?
Yeah, new one.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Looks awesome. Good work, Doug.
All right, anything else that you got?
No, I have a few things that are en route on the boat, on the water, but that's what next week's for. Right?
All right. Well, have you played anything you want to talk about?
Well, for those of you keeping score at home, and we know we have a couple dedicated fans, I intended on playing Longshot and Tenpenny Parks and also Princess Bride. We have that coming up as a recommended game, but instead I injured myself. So I spent most of the weekend and early part of the week in bed. I had a back explosion. I won't go into any more detail on that other than I was working out and my L5 completely exploded. So, no, I haven't. Today's the first day where I've been able to sit down to play board games. So.
Well, you did play Longshot last week.
I did.
Just not with your family.
Well, and I did. We got in a round of Lost Cities by the good Dr. Reiner Knizia, as he's known in our house as well. Josie said, don't you mean the good Dr. Reiner Knizia? So, and a little bit of Lost Cities, which I do well in.
All right.
How about you?
Well, we got Creature Comforts to the table. So that's a new game from Kids Table Board Gaming.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do a couple more playthroughs of that and see how it shakes out. Early impressions.
That's going to get recommended.
Are pretty good. So that's been fun. Anything else? What else did we play last week? Longshot, that.
Longshot and Creature Comforts are what we reviewed. Longshot, the dice game, I should say.
All right.
You played another game with your family, didn't you? No. Didn't
make
it to the run sheet?
No, I played Creature Comforts with Emily, so...
cool.
Yeah, that's what we played. If you, Michael mentioned that we've got some passionate listeners, and we do, and we encourage those to follow us and connect with us anywhere you can find us, whether that's Facebook or Twitter. We've got a contact form on our website, gameschooler.com. And just a simple way is email at gameschooler.com. You can reach out to us. And we love hearing from you guys. If you have any questions, comments. There was something I was going to ask, but I forgot what it was now that I wanted to do a poll
Me
on.
Me or our listeners?
Oh, yes.
Surprises?
Yes, I'm going to do a poll, and I think it's going to show up on Spotify. I think I have that ability to do that. But I want to know from our listeners, what is your preferred method of communication or reaching out to us? So
Great
if
question.
There's something that we can do, whether, you know, if you want to interact with us more on Twitter or Board Game Geek or something like that, let us know where would be the most convenient way for you to stay in touch with us.
That's great.
So, all right.
You have that ability that you've unlocked through your podcast creator badge that you
yes.
can just open up a
yeah,
poll on
I got
Spotify,
it.
Huh?
Yeah, I got it. It was one of the prizes when I won the game Summer Camp.
Oh, great.
It was a podcast creator badge. So that is all the follow-up we have for this week. Let's move on to the recommended game of the week.
The recommended game of the week. The recommended game of the week is a family-friendly game we think you should add to your collection, and it passes our stringent criteria for quality and content. This week's game is Ten Penny Parks by Thunderworks Games. Doug, give us the stats.
Published in 2022, the designer is Nate Leinhardt. Art is by Vincent Dutrait. 1 to 4 players, 45 to 75 minutes, ages 14 and up. A game of Ten Penny Parks is played over 5 rounds called Months. Each month, players take turns placing workers on the game board to take actions like removing trees, building concessions and attractions, and buying more property in order to make their growing theme parks as attractive to visiting people or victory point tokens as possible. At the end of each month, rewards are given to the player with the fairground that best exemplifies certain raw emotions. And after 5 months, the players with the most VP tokens wins. So this is a tile placement, worker placement game in which you are sending out your workers to buy concession stands, buy attractions, or buy more property, which is all represented by cardboard tiles that then you are going to place in this grid that is your land. There are trees on your land that you can try and remove. You don't necessarily have to, depending on the shape of the attractions and the concessions that you're adding. And these attractions are shaped very much like Tetris pieces or yep. polyomino pieces that you are placing on the board. The kicker with this one is that your attractions cannot be adjacent to one another.
Which I continue to play wrong. From playing Baron Park,
yes.
I'm used to the attractions must touch each other. No, you actually need space so that people can walk around your park, which thematically makes sense
yep.
and also makes the game a lot more challenging.
Correct. And so you're fighting over these as you have 3 workers, and it says what? That you're competing over certain raw emotions, which are
yeah.
awe, thrill, and joy.
There's 3 different tracks.
That then every time you build an attraction or a concession stand or cover up spaces on your board.
You advance on one of those tracks.
You advance
or
on those,
multiple tracks.
Those tracks. And then at the end of the round, whoever is in the lead in those tracks gets a bonus. So, for example, one of them, it gives you an extra worker for the round, but you have to move back on that track. So you move back a space on the track, but then you get an extra worker for the next round. The next one, you can move back a space and you keep the first player marker. The first player marker is kind of interesting because what it allows you to do is not only go first in the next round, but in the center of the board is a Ferris wheel.
We need to take a moment and talk about this.
A cardboard Ferris wheel that has price modifiers on it that is going to manipulate the cost of the various attractions that are in the park or available for purchase. So if you have the first player marker, you can set the attraction that you want to buy with a -2 discount, so
right.
you're not paying full price, or you can say, "Oh, Michael's going after this. I'm going to jack the price up on him So I know he wants that.
So it'd be $10 instead of $8. So whatever car whatever the value is on the card, it's modified based on where that Ferris wheel lines up with it.
Yep. So after you take care of those bonuses, the next thing you can do is you can advertise the rides that are already in your park. And it's one of the main ways that you get victory points for the attractions that you add. But one of the main ways that you can get more victory points is by buying advertising. So you spend some of your money to get victory points, which is alluring the people to come, as they say, visiting people to your park. And then the round resets, you get income based on the concession stands and souvenir stands that you have in your park. And you start over and do it all again. And after five rounds, you get points from how far you can get up on those tracks, those the thrill, awe, and joy. You get points from your attractions. You get points that you've accumulated throughout the game from buying advertisements. And you get victory points for
the cards. At the very beginning of the game, you're dealt three
objectives.
And you keep two of the objectives. And if you achieve your objectives, you get some bonus points for that.
Now,
yeah,
good
description.
Full disclaimer, this is a game that was developed by one of our friends.
Yeah.
In the local area that we know very well. So
we've been excited to play this. I think it hit both of our lists for want to play for 2022. I know it was on my list for excited when we had that high what am I trying to say here? We had a recommended list at the end of 2021 of games we were looking forward to playing.
Anticipated games.
Yeah.
And this is one that I had actually played a very, very early prototype of it while they were starting to develop.
Influencer over there.
Yeah, so
prototypes, advanced copies. My goodness.
Normally, we are not a cult of the new podcast, but in this case, we'll take a rare exception. And it has no bearing on our opinion of this game.
No, so we reviewed it. We reviewed it thoroughly. It passed our stringent criteria for quality and content. The other thing is it's available right now. So that's where it makes sense to talk about the game, because that's a big part of our recommended game of the week. We want people who are listening right now in real time to be able and go out and either get it or coerce one of their friends to get it so that they can play it. And this game is available right now. So
yeah. All right. So what are some of the things that you like about this game?
Well, I've had that question loaded in my head. I think, you know, we did Baron Park just a few weeks ago, Phil Walker Harding's game, and we talked about, do we do another Polyomino where you're building a park? This is different though because of all the different mechanics that are happening within this game. There's a little bit of a racing element. There's definitely a little bit of a worker placement element. There's I just really like how all of those little pieces fit under the hood of one game. And when we played before the podcast, we got through a two-player game very quickly. So I like the playtime. I think even the first time we played this, when we had three people at the table and we had just learned it, it was still under an hour. The downtime is really, really good in the game. There's a little bit of time to think about what I'm going to do next, and then it's my turn right away. I think they're not just to load up everything that I like about it, but I also really like the tension and the social interaction. At the end of the month, if I'm furthest along on the track, I can look around the table and say, actually, I think I want to continue to go first, so I will move back. And so there is a little bit more interaction than I thought that there would be.
Yeah.
Those are just some of the highlights that I have. You?
Well, and I think it does a great job. It certainly doesn't overstay its welcome, which is nice.
And what do you mean by that? Let's explain that term. Hear that on Board Game Podcast, but what's that mean?
It doesn't get to a point where you're thinking, I wish this was over, or it should have been over two rounds ago.
Yeah.
It's right at that perfect length where if it was any longer, I'd say, and if it was any shorter, I'd feel like I didn't get to do as much as I wanted to. So I feel like it fits in that sweet spot really well. And the fact that it's combining the idea of tile placement and worker placement and the competition of those tracks all in one game that plays so quickly is kind of remarkable, that it can kind of put all of that stuff into one game. The other thing about this one is I am usually not a huge fan of Vincent Dutrait's artwork. I may be in the minority of that. I think I am.
Well, you slam him seemingly most weeks. So go ahead. What do you want to say?
Because everybody else gives him so much love.
I love Vincent Dutrait.
I love his artwork in this game.
It's unbelievable.
I think it really fits the style of the game and the time period that they were going for. Really reminds me, he did art on New York 1901. Mm. This has some of those similar type of feels to it. But I like it, I'm usually not a fan, but the colors are great.
Well, and I'm a Vincent Dutrait fanboy because the colors usually do stand out. So as a colorblind individual, I don't struggle with his games typically. I can see there's clear symbols and iconography. The components are another thing that I really like. I thought you might touch on it, so I saved it. There's one other thing. The rule set is very straightforward. And, you know, 2-3 years ago, I probably would not have picked up on something like that. But reading enough rules, you know, when you're reading multiple rules in a week, the rules in this game are straightforward. And I think they did a really nice job.
Yeah, they stick with you. And it's a... It's probably, it's like 4 pages, maybe?
I was going to say 4.
So it's a pretty quick teach, a pretty quick... I mean, I love the idea of that walking path and the idea that your attractions can't be right next to each other. Because it's such... Normally, when you're playing tile placement polyomino games, it's how compact can you get everything and fit and cover every square on your board? And the fact that this takes a different approach is really interesting and fascinating. The fact that you can do... diagonal, and like they can connect diagonal, but they cannot share a side with one another. And so flexing those pieces around the trees and stuff like that, just really, really a fascinating puzzle that's not in a lot of polyomino games.
The other thing that I like about it is there are some spaces that you can go to at any point in time. So there's a realtor space where if you want to add on to your park and pay $3, if somebody's already there, if Doug has a meeple there, I can still throw out one of my workers and go there. But then on the Ferris wheel, when you're buying from the marketplace, only one player can be there at a time. And so there's just a value and almost like an order of operations of when should I buy the card versus when should I go dig up the trees or add on to my space. I like those decisions that happen within the game.
The other thing on a component-wise is a punching out this game. The cardboard in this game is really thick, you know, and the dollars are little dollar bills and $3 bills, but they're thick, they're chunky, they're tokens. It really works well.
What did your kiddos do with the leftover cardboard? When you get a game like that, does it suddenly become a doll's dog bed or anything like that?
No, that has never happened.
Oh, what? Well, when we get punch outs like this, our kids will then get the X-Acto knife and start to really... Sometimes it's tough to get the leftover cardboard out of the house.
Hmm. Well, you got growing the Wright sisters in the basement. They're going to be building cardboard planes. That's pretty impressive. Anything that you would think is a concern that people should know about on this?
No,
this
just set up. And I don't want to use the word fiddly. That's not what I'm saying. It's impressive. The Ferris wheel is impressive, but we have talked about this with other games. If you're in a community setting, if you're playing games outside of your own house, this is a game that I just wonder about the durability. And it's a wonder over time, how will this hold up if you have 8, 10, 12, 14-year-olds just handling the game, spinning the Ferris wheel. The wooden components are great. I think the cards are great. I don't have any concern about that. But the Ferris wheel over time, I'm wondering about.
Well, and to give
fair or unfair, it's just something to think about.
Well, and to give people fair warning, the Ferris wheel is not something that you're spinning or twisting every round. You're rotating it two spaces, you know. So it's not something that now. In a middle school classroom, kids are probably going to be flipping that thing around like crazy, which may cause some problems. But overall, I think the components are really solid.
They're fantastic. And it says 14 and up. I really think this is a 10, 12, 12 and up.
You
can play. Though that's my only thought.
Yeah, my daughter was watching us play the last game, and I feel like she could have jumped right in. So,
no concerns on that one. Any concerns?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's a pretty, well thought out, well developed game that doesn't have a lot. It's got a clean design. There's not a lot of wrinkles in it. Works for me.
And let me just dive in on that concern real quick, if we have time, and we have time because it's our podcast.
We're short on time.
You know, Josie is at that middle school age where sleepovers are a thing and going over to a friend's house, and we'll take games. And it's one of those things I've been very clear about. No, there are games. Take a game. Our games are to be played with. So if that's a Dice Throne Adventures or a Dice Throne Season 2, I mean, those are big $90 games, right? And I was very clear. You could take games. There's only a handful, like the Catan Collector's Edition. And I was explaining when Everdell comes in, the Collector's Edition, like those don't leave the house. And Tenpenny Parks and Cape May were two games. Maybe it's just because they're new. Maybe it's because the art is so beautiful that Thunderworks has done, where it's like, I don't want those two to leave the house. So it might not be rational, but Dead Reckoning and Tenpenny Parks were two games where I had to put the caveat on her. Please don't take these games. I haven't had a chance to set up the ship or set up the Ferris wheel yet.
I'm going to send Emily out with all 47 boxes of X-Men, there you go. Marvel United.
But hey, sleep over at our house, huh? bring them all.
All right.
Well, why did you bring two cars? You brought the car and the van.
We rented a U-Haul for this one night get together. All right. So on the surface, it may seem like this is a game that doesn't have a lot of educational value.
Wrong.
We disagree. And Michael and I have a list of skills that we think your kids can learn from a game like this. So, Michael, what do you got?
My core skill is goals, a game in which students have clearly defined goals. Clearly defined victory conditions that they must work towards. There are those little milestones that happen at the end of each month with nice bonuses or payouts that I like how that goal works. So if I acquire a card, I get on the Ferris wheel and I get a card, and it allows me to move up two on the thrill. That's the lightning strike one, right? Yep. Am I saying that right? I just want to be accurate
sure,
here.
Sure. Sorry, I was taking a drink.
That's okay. And I timed it perfectly so I could get your head nod. If I cover up a space on my board that's a wild, I could potentially move up an extra one on any, so I need to be able to look out and see which one will put me in the lead. And I might not be explaining that right, but there are enough goals within the game, short-term objectives that kiddos can knock out, and adults too. Do I want to pay for advertising? You helped me out in the last game when you said, well, take the money so that you can then pay out for advertising instead of just the one victory point. So there's all those little goals within this game that are numerous. There seems to be so many different goals and milestones throughout the game that it stood out to me with this one.
Yeah, no, that's a great skill. There are a lot of them in this one. The one that I've got down for my core skill is observation. And I think this really comes out, especially with the higher player counts. A game that rewards careful watching with attention to details and behaviors in order to understand and arrive in a judgment. Watching what your players, your opponents are doing, and certainly the more you play this game, you'd have a better understanding of what some of the goals are that people are trying to achieve, and when to price something out of range or when to take advantage of a worker placement spot to get an attraction before your opponent can. Those little things that you're paying attention to, even the concession stands, they're little one space. They take up one space on your grid. They're small, but they change every round.
Yeah.
You know? So being aware of what's out there, what you can do, all the little things that you can manipulate, I think it's a big part of moving up on your core skill, those goals, is figuring out, observing what's going on with your opponents and what's going on with the game. Keeping an eye on those advancement tracks, you know, the thrill and the awe, and seeing where your opponents are. Can I beat them? Can I get, you know, there's an interesting thing where if two players are sharing the same space, whichever one got there last goes on top, and that's the one that's winning.
That's the tiebreaker.
So sometimes it's just like, well, I'll just bump it up one, you know. And
so going first can have its advantages, but going last can also be an advantage,
especially
if you cover up a wild. Because it's like, which one do I want to jump in first? Yeah, that's great. The other thing with observation is just looking at the actual board and seeing what fits.
Yeah.
And the cards, they do a really nice job of showing, but there's something about once I get that tile in my hand and on my board, suddenly it doesn't fit where I thought it was going to fit. So, no, that's a great skill.
Kind of leads into my next skill, probably on your list too, spatial
perception.
That's
my next. Yeah, yep. Go ahead. A game that strengthens a student's understanding of the spatial relationships with the objects in their environment and themselves. Spatial perception. Go ahead.
Yeah, and we really tackled that with – this really comes up anytime you're playing a polyomino tile placement game. But where it really comes up in this one is where we talked about having that non-adjacency.
Yep.
Because you're trying to maneuver around trees that you may not have cut down, or thinking about which trees you do need to cut down in order to make the attraction that you want fit. So there's a lot of mental gymnastics as you're trying to figure out where things go. In this one.
Yeah, and I thought, not to just compare it to Baron Park, but we did that just a few weeks ago. That's the major difference from this game and that game. It's to have a polyomino where you need to have space. Space is a requirement. Maybe it's just my brain where that's a new constraint. But it was a new variable that's added in that just added to the complexity of the game.
Yeah, so. And I think in touching on Baron Park again, this is Tenpenny Parks is a great next game.
Yeah.
You know, you'd start with Baron Park, and then if you're playing with you know, people that have played games or familiar with games, this is a great next level. Not to say that this isn't an entry-level game, because I think it can be. And, it can go down to 10.
But the complexity, I mean, it shows. Baron Park is a 1.64, designed by Phil Walker Harding, art by Clemens Franz. Just a fantastic game that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Whereas Tenpenny Parks, I'm going to look up the complexity and do a stall. So why don't you take the mic?
Next one I've got is Resource Management, a game that boosts a student's capacity to efficiently and effectively oversee available assets. And this game is all about that money crunch. And you are trying to figure out how much money you're getting in income, how much you can spend on attractions, and then how much money you can advertise those attractions to get victory points. It's all over the place.
And I have that as well. So there's a lot of crossover. The complexity on Tenpenny Parks is a 2.5. So it's a big difference when you're going from a 1.64 to a 2.5. And with the resource management, it's the managing and manipulating of value in many different ways. If I buy a hot dog stand and a concession stand early in the game, I'm going to get paid out four times versus if I buy it in the last round, I'm getting paid out once. So you can really break apart the economics of the game and when you buy things and the payoff. There's a lot there with that one.
Well, it's kind of remarkable how they've managed to distill the idea of being a business owner, managing a park, the way that they've set the finances up in this game. You know, you're creating your park. You've got to buy attractions. You need to advertise to get people in.
Yep.
You know, and once they're in, you need to have stuff for them to spend their money on so you can recoup that money. And it's like that little money engine that's in there economically is very distilled, but it's there.
It's there. And any of our longtime listeners will know both of us love an amusement park game.
I mean, yeah.
We've talked about Fun Fair. We've talked about Baron Park. And Tenpenny Parks really adds to that. And my last two skills, I'm going to combo them up because I see them as being together. And that's tactical thinking and responsiveness. Tactical thinking, we define that as a game that challenges students to make decisions based on currently available and frequently changing information. Excuse me. Whereas responsiveness is a game that tests a student's mental reaction time. So when that Ferris wheel gets spun and the first person takes their turn, I may not have wanted a specific card, but if I recognize that there's a $2 discount on that card and the space is open now, there's a little bit of a now or never. Have I chopped down the trees yet to play that card? So getting the order of operations, the responsiveness and tactical, where I see it in this game, it's not I have to do this immediately. Mm. It's I have to get my next three turns mapped out immediately. I have at the start of the month, I really see it as that's where the responsiveness and tactical work together.
Yeah, and I've got tactical thinking on my list as well, but the interesting thing I wrote down is I've got tactical thinking, and I also have strategic thinking.
yeah.
I think, shows up in this game. It's kind of a weird anomaly that has both of those.
It does, though. The early game purchases are big.
When you get those end-of-game goal cards, they're not worth a lot of points, but it gives you a strategy and a direction to go for. And I have not played a game where people aren't actively going after those, right, even though they don't.
So let me ask you something. We haven't talked about this. Do you go after them right away, or do you have a thought of, I will get this done by the third month?
No, I just have – I guess I have it where it's like I'm going to work towards it, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to let it get in the way of potentially more victory points.
I think that says a lot about our work habits and our work patterns, because I want to get those immediately. I try to get those done in the first month if possible. I am going to get those objectives done now. And so
at the detriment of everything else.
Yes, okay. Because I'm going to get them done.
Yes. Well, and you've done that. So a weird combination to have both tactical and strategic thinking, but I think this game warrants it.
Yeah, and the other thing, I don't have a skill, but, and I probably should have put it in the part where I like it. The game just seems so balanced. And it's not... Our friend that helped to develop this game plays a lot of games and is probably one of the five smartest humans I've ever met in my life. And I'm able to sit at the table and play this game and do okay, at least compete.
Yeah.
And I think that says a lot. When we talked about your daughter would have been able to jump in and play the game, I think this game, for everything that we've talked about, is still very balanced, where you can have a gamer and somebody who's just stumbling into board games, play it, have fun, and the scores are still going to be relatively close.
Well, and isn't it interesting that I feel like you could somebody could watch you play this game for one round and have a really good idea and jump in on the next?
Yeah, it is a game like that where, you know, I've talked about with my 13-year-old kiddo, she just, okay, let's play the game. Well, no, you need to hear the rules. No, let's just play. I'll figure it out as we play. And then there are all those exception rules that happen, people trip and stumble. That's not this game.
Yeah.
You can truly teach a round, play one round open, and then go play 10 Penny Parks.
Yep.
So.
All right. Well, that is our recommended game of the week, 10 Penny Parks by Thunderworks Games. And let's move on to the School of Gaming.
The School of Gaming. In the School of Gaming, we discuss concepts, keywords, etiquette, and helpful ideas in the world of gaming and education. This week, we'll be discussing resources for teaching board games.
Yeah, this came up a while ago. I think we talked about this vaguely in one of our earlier episodes, the idea of
what we talked about it in the School of Gaming.
Yeah, what we can do to be better teachers and kind of approaches that we can take when teaching a game. And this is more designed of like what tools are out there to help you learn and or teach the game to somebody else and kind of take the heavy burden off of yourself, right?
Absolutely.
So there's a couple of things that are out there. You want to take this one as far as what your... The big impetus for this segment was?
Yeah, I'll talk to previously, and it was about a year ago when we covered this topic, we talked about the YouTube channel Watch It Played, which just does a fantastic job really teaching board games and using videos. So get out on YouTube, go to the publisher's websites. You can see so many different video tutorials to walk you through it. But I recently read an article on Dicebreaker, a board game blog, about an app called Dized, D-I-Z-E-D. And so I downloaded it, and this app taught me to play Libertalia, Winds of Galecrest from Stonemaier Games. Walked me through how to play it in a very intuitive, it was a step-by-step, just something that made sense to me for how to learn the board game. And I was able to scroll back and forth and go through different modules, look at the setup, look at the turn order, really dig in and look at how the cards are constructed and the different pieces of the game in a way that blew me away. So thinking about, there are apps out there that will teach people how to play board games, I think it just opens up a whole nother space from a game schooling perspective, especially where you have different learners, different learner profiles, you know, people who may not be neurotypical, people who who just really want to teach themselves in a way that's different than learning with the whole class. So to me, that was a, because I'm used to reading something about the gaming industry and then waiting 18 months for it to show up, right? Well, you back this campaign and a year and a half later. And so just reading the blog article and then clicking down on the app and actually going to my shelf and ripping the shrink off of a game that I have and learning to play a game, I was like, this is fantastic. This is just a great resource to have.
Yeah, I came across Dice about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was aware of it. But, you know, when it first started out, they didn't have a ton of games on there.
They have a ton of games
on there. And now they do. And so I re-downloaded it and was looking at it after you had brought it up. And they have a lot of stuff. And I think, you know, you talked about people, you know, learning singularity, that, you know, by themselves. This is a great app that if you stream this to your video on the front of the class, the fact that it goes step by step and doesn't – half of the thing that's problem with a rule book is – they're too busy and there's little outbreak boxes all over the place and, you know, which step comes first and we got to teach you this. The Dice app really just narrows it down to like, okay, we're going to talk about this section.
Right.
And it's almost like a PowerPoint presentation that is one slide at a time that really makes it.
It was almost to me when I was reading it, I was like, this is how I cook in the kitchen. I'm following this part of the recipe right now. So that... it made sense for me. The other part where I struggle with rule books, I can tell and I'll mutter about it. And I don't, but I can tell when a rule book has been designed in a different country, you know, initially. And I'm sure people in other countries can tell when a rule book was designed by some darn American. You know, it's, there are different ways and modalities for learning and to see how that app worked, and it was new for me, and it was just a joy to be able to see that, oh wow, that I can learn a lot of different titles here in a short period of time. Same way that Watch It Played has all those videos out there. So
yeah, and that's there's a couple other things that I wanted to bring up, which is obviously Rodney Smith Watch It Played is an excellent series of kind of guiding you through and seeing how that all works. He's got a bunch of stuff. The other thing that a lot of people don't think about is a lot of the publishers have resources and their own videos, but they're not big, huge YouTube stars.
Right.
So they don't have the following. But a lot of the publishers, you go there and you can find their in-house video on how to play a game, which can be very helpful.
And the app is one that stands out to me. We talked about it, you know, almost a year ago when we did this segment, but the Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, just a 3-minute video, put it on the iPad, and that was a lot better than me teaching it to my own kid. You know, so.
And then the last thing that I thought about is the idea of using, a lot of games now have iOS and app versions for your phone. And that's a really good way to learn a game.
I actually have that in my notes.
To play it. And, you know, there's a lot of hand-holding that goes, especially if you're the one that's going to be teaching it in the future. And it takes care of a lot of that heavy lifting for you, that you get the knack of how it works. That I think that's a great resource for going forward, is starting with that, and you get that play time in.
You're talking about the app, right? Go to the app and just run through the tutorial to refresh how it works.
Yeah, but and if you can play the game 5 times, you know, solo, in an app against bot characters, and then bring it to your class, you're going to be in a whole different position. And that's one of the things I would imagine is kind of a concern. It's like, oh, I want to bring this into my classroom, but I don't have anybody to play it with enough that I feel like I'm comfortable then spreading it out to the entire class. And an app can kind of bridge that gap, I think.
Yeah. No, that's great.
So hopefully those are some ideas for you.
The other thing, because I know our listeners, we have a lot of educators and people that are game schooling. Tell us what you're doing for learning and teaching games. What are some of your strategies? What are some of your tactics that you use to learn a lot of different titles or to teach a lot of different titles? This is something that I feel like I am still in the infancy and have a long ways to go in this area.
Yeah. Well, and certainly reach out and tell us. And like we said, Dice, a great app. We encourage you to check that out and see what they've got going. Although I did try it out online, and I think the app version is
Android
much better.
Or the iOS. I downloaded the iOS version. I tried it as well, and I was actually directed to go download the app. So.
Yeah. All right. So that is some resources for teaching board games. Let's move on to the high five. If you're anything like us, you're constantly on the hunt for new games to try out. And this week, we reveal our personal high five list of family-friendly games that make you think spring. So Michael must have been in the springtime fever. Spring fever wanted this list of recommended games. So, or high five list, I should say. This was your idea, right?
It might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you think spring, this is a very thematic list I have, Doug. I've got a lot of thematic tie-ins. When you think spring, what do you think of?
I think of new, green, just nature abuzz.
Yeah, I think of baseball. And number five on my list is Baseball 2045, year 2015, designed by Mike Fitzgerald, publishers Eagle Griffin Games, 1 to 4 players. The community says that it's best at four. Best at two, 45 minutes, ages 9+, the weight is 2.21 out of 5. I am going to read the copy for this because the flavor text is so good at describing the game. American baseball was on its last legs as a spectator sport. Football had become the predominant national pastime. That is until the year 2032, the year baseball decided to revolutionize the game and regain the throne. Starting in 2032, baseball games were shortened to 6 innings. Pitchers were encouraged to have bionic arm implants to improve their pitching. And it goes on from there. So you are basically competing against some robot freakish droids playing baseball. But the thing that I remember about this game, and I played it with you a while back, is that there were players that were called naturals, which were really good at fielding, but not so good at what some of the people who had the bionic arms. Just a great little...
Yeah, well, there's completely human, the naturals. You have some...
I'm talking baseball 2045. That's the version.
No, and there's humans, then there's like cyborgs where they're half and half, and then there's complete robots that you're also drafting. So
just a fun little game where you're playing baseball over 6 innings, and that's my number five for Think Spring.
All right, my number five is a recommended game that we talked about in episode 36. I wanted to bring that one up, and that's Wingspan, 2019, Stonemaier Games, 1 to 5 players, about 60 minutes. Wingspan just has that nature. There's a lot of nature games that I was looking at, but then they tend to lean towards the fall or kind of dark, you know, and Wingspan, the artwork that's on the cards and on your main player boards just has that new fresh
super spring
feel to it. The little birdhouse dice tower that you're throwing stuff into.
The wooden eggs.
Yeah. It's like a little Easter game. So great. And this list was kind of weird for me because there's part of me that wanted to put them in the order that I thought that they best reflected spring. And a combination of this was my favorite game, too. So mine
is super weird list to put
mine
together.
Mine is all over the place. Where this by no means is my least favorite game on the list. It may be actually one of my highest, but that there's other ones I thought were more spring-like. I guess.
Totally get it. And on that, when I think of spring, I think of Easter. And so number four, I'm actually bringing two games to number four. First one is Bunny Kingdom. Mm-hmm. 2017 designer Sir Richard Garfield. He was knighted by the Game Schooler podcast.
I remember that ceremony.
Published by Yellow, 2 to 4 players, 40 to 60 minutes, 12+. The community says 10+, weight is 2.27. And in Bunny Kingdom, players are playing cards out of hand to place bunnies on the board in this family-friendly card drafting and area control game. If you want to learn more, check out episode 18 of the Game Schooler podcast, where we dove deep into this adorable game. And going with Bunny Kingdom, yes, I'm putting a second game in the fourth slot, is Chocolate Factory. Because Bunny Kingdom and chocolate, you've got Easter. Doug's shaking his head like this is the craziest high five. Michael's fired from having suggestions. But Chocolate Factory is a 2019 game brought to us by Matthew Dunstan, Brett J. Gilbert, lots of awesome artists as well. Alley Cat Games, 1 to 4 players, best at 3, 45 to 90 minutes, 10+. Weight is 2.88. It's a heavier game, but you are creating the most efficient assembly line to produce the best, most delicious chocolate. Very different from Bunny Kingdom, but I just thought if I'm going to do Easter, I couldn't find one game that represented Easter, so I had to bring two, Bunny Kingdom and Chocolate Factory.
Bunny Kingdom was on my short list. Chocolate Factory was nowhere near it.
To be found. I know it, but it could be the only time it makes a high five for me. We played it. I had a lot of fun at one of our game school reviews.
It would probably be number one of like the best game that represents running a business.
Yeah, it's a straight Euro. Not a lot of chocolate in that game, but it is an assembly line game, right? Taylorism, yep, at its finest.
All right, my number four is a game by Uwe Rosenberg, Cottage Garden, published in 2016.
What? I thought you would have Bonanza.
Bonanza? No? No, that doesn't make me think spring. harvesting beans is not my
honorable mention.
My go-to spring feel. I can't wait to harvest those beans. No, Cottage Garden 2016 Stronghold Games, 1 to 4 players, about 60 minutes. This is a polyomino game in which you are putting flowers in your garden, and it's got the whole 9 yards of those little orange clay pots.
Yep.
And trying to fit everything in. I think it's got two scoring tracks, and then whichever one you're the lowest on is the one that's your final score, one of those mechanisms.
Now, I haven't played this one yet. It's on my want to play list. Are there other games in this line as well, or isn't there fall?
Yeah, there's Indian Summer and then Autumn something.
Okay, so I've got that right.
Yeah, that's a trilogy.
Series of games from Uwe.
Yep. So that is my number four, Cottage Garden.
Awesome. Awesome. Number three for me is Fox and the Forest, designers Joshua Burgle and publishers Renegade Games. It's 2 players only, 15 to 30 minutes, ages 10+. The weight's 1.58 out of 5. Very cool app. Doug's like, how could this be spring and not summer or fall? I just associate, you know, a little 2-player trick-taking game with springtime. And this one has been on my high fives a lot, so I'll have to give it a rest for a while. I'm a huge trick-taking fan. I really like Fox in the Forest. The app is great. I will tell you, the people who play that app are absolutely awesome at it. I'm pretty good at trick-taking games. Whenever I play that app, I just get crushed. I don't know why you're having such a hard time with this one. You're walking around the booth here. You're making fun of me. You're laughing. Go ahead. What's on your mind, Doug?
This is not spring at all. I don't like to call out your list, but...
Man, go ahead, call it out. I stand by that. How's the Fox in the Forest not a spring game?
I don't know. Maybe the Snow Witch and the wolves that are all in an entire suit of cards. When was the last time you looked at the cards on the game?
Like this week, Doug. I played the app recently.
Those are not spring.
Doug.
This is autumn.
There was snow yesterday in Wisconsin, all right?
That is not...
That is true.
That's accurate. But does snow make you think of spring?
Technically, sometimes, unfortunately, yes.
Oh, man.
Duluth got hit with like 14 inches this week. Now, I know we're a little bit far away from Duluth, Minnesota, but that game reminds me of spring.
Nobody thinks the remnants of winter is spring.
What do you got?
All right, well, number
hold on, hold on. Nobody thinks the remnants of winter are spring? I can't let you go on that. We get 4 days of spring
not
here
positively,
in the Midwestern
United States. Not positively. Okay. All right. My number three is one of my favorite games of all time that recently or is just about to fund on Kickstarter a new version of it, and that is Birds of a Feather.
Oh, yeah.
Published originally in 2015.
Wait, that's the same game? The one that's on Kickstarter right now?
Yeah, it's an
updated
version.
You talk about it all the time?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to back it now.
Yep. 2015, Nothing Sacred Games, 1 to 7 players, 15 minutes. This is it's not a trick-taking game, but it has that same type of feel. Everybody plays down a card simultaneously, and each card has a habitat in it, and that's the habitat that you're in, and you can see other birds in that same habitat that people have played. And then the next round, those cards that you just played stay there, and you play a new card out, and you can see the previous turn's habitats. If you go to that habitat, they're like lingering birds that are still there when you go to that new habitat. And so there's this cool. It's got a little score pad that you're keeping track of which birds you've seen, mm-hmm. which really makes it feel like actual bird watching. It's like, oh, I got that one. But there's also this cool mechanism in there where you're trying to hold back the birds that are in your hand so that you're the only one that sees them. You don't want other people to see them. And so how you play those out and manipulate them is just an awesome, awesome little puzzle.
You've talked about this. This is probably the third time it's made
your list. It's such an obscure game.
So the one that's on Kickstarter right now is by Snowbright Studio, and it's Birds of a Feather, Western North America. So our podcast will air. It will still have 5 days left. So if you're listening anytime past May 5th, I'm sorry. But if you're hearing us in real time, you can go out and back that.
Yep, one of my favorite games. That's my number three, Birds of a Feather.
Cool. My number two is Clip Cut Parks 2019. Designers Sean Graham and Scott Huntington, published by Renegade Game Studios. 1 to 4 players. I cannot imagine playing this one solo, so I'm going to just throw that caveat out there. 1 to 4 players, 30 minutes, ages 8+. Absolutely agree with that. We've actually played it with when our 6-year-old was 4 and had a blast with it. But the weight on it is 1.25 out of 5. In Clip Cut Parks, players are rolling dice and then have to make cuts on a sheet of paper. And when pieces fall off the sheet, they get placed on park cards. And you're trying to complete those park cards. When the park card is filled up, it is considered completed. The scissors that are included with this game are awesome. They have a nice little ruler on them. This game is a fun little game that as long as kiddos can independently hold scissors, they can play the game. It is a McCabe family favorite. It's one that we have played just a handful of times in the last year, but it is one that I can confidently say we will come back to. When we have non-gamers at the house, friends over, it's one that my wife will bring out and teach. It's a very, very easy teach, and it's fun. So
yeah, I think playing that one, people might think that you've got issues sitting in a corner cutting.
You can't play that solo.
Cutting pieces of paper apart.
Can you just imagine if I'm at a coffee shop throwing that? Because the dice aren't gentle either. So I'm chucking dice.
And then cutting little paper.
Cutting out paper. And then what's the tiebreaker for yourself solo?
Like
because the tiebreaker in that game is the crump. When you, if you can't play a piece that falls, you have to crumple it up. And so there, and it's usually mad crumpling because I'm mad that I couldn't play the piece that fell, right? So I'm crumpling it up.
If you're in the corner of Starbucks playing this, people are going to think you're writing a ransom note where you're cutting out little things.
Let's get that to go.
All right. My number two is Arboretum from 2015 from Renegade Game Studios. 2 to 4 players, 30 minutes is a game entirely about planting trees, and you're trying to plant trees into a grid and kind of make little walking paths and rows. But the trick in this one is you can only score the trees in your arboretum if at the end of the game you have the highest value of those trees still in your hand. So it can be kind of a brain-burny, clunky thing trying to, like, I want to maximize.
You lost me there. Say that again now.
So you're playing, say, for example, oak trees down into your arboretum. And you are going, the only way that you can score those at the end of the game is if at the end of the game you reveal your hand and you still have the most value oak trees.
Oh.
So if you had the most value in oak trees, I wouldn't score them.
Yep, got it.
So you're trying to balance how far can I push out this to try and score it without...
Do you get to see what other people are drafting or collecting? What's hidden information?
No, you don't know what's in their you don't know what's in their hand. The only thing you know is what's in their arboretum. So if I see that you're going after a whole bunch of cherry trees or whatever, then I'm going to or spruce, I'm going to start collecting spruce and maybe keep you from trying to score that.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty heady game and it can be pretty cutthroat but it certainly has it's got Beth Sobel artwork
that's
pastel watercolors, just really, really fits that whole spring vibe.
I've been wanting to play that for a long time. I see it come up on great sales too, so that's good to know.
All right, number one.
Number one for me is Wingspan. You mentioned it and gave the stats, Elizabeth Hargrave and Stollmeyer Games. That is a game that I would play solo, 1 to 5 players. 40 to 70 minutes, 10+, 2.45 out of 5. This is the number one family game on Board Game Geek. It's also the number 23 game overall and the number 25 strategy game. So when you have a game that is that highly regarded in three very different lists of family, overall, and strategy. What else do I need to say about it other than go back and listen to episode 36 that Doug mentioned, where we talked at length about the recommended game. This is a game that I need to play at least once per year, every year, for as long as I'm walking the earth. I really enjoy Wingspan, and it makes me think spring. Everything that you said, just the big, bright colors, the birds. And where we live in the Midwestern United States, birds come back in spring, or at least summer. So
yeah.
Birds make me think spring.
Yeah, great game, obviously on my list, so I approve. My number one.
Well, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, no, that's my job, is to approve your list. I take it very seriously. My number one was a no-brainer for me. It was the first game that popped into my head. It's a game that I don't have in my collection, but for about a year and a half has just been kind of hovering in various shopping carts online that I just have not pulled the trigger.
What is it?
It is a game called Herbaceous.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a game about potting plants. You start the game, you mm-hmm. have four pots that you can put plants into. And on your turn, there's a deck. You have some cards in your hand. You're either flipping over a card, or you're flipping over a card and you're either adding it to the community pile, or you're taking it into your own hand.
Mm-hmm.
But then whatever you did the first time, you take another one and do the opposite.
Yep.
So if the first card I put in my hand, the next one is definitely going into the community pile.
Ooh.
But then the thing about it is, when you plant, and you can only plant those four times, you use any cards that are in your hand and any cards that you won from the community pile and put them all into a pot. And they all score kind of differently. And so there's that little push and pull of like, oh, there's a lot of those out there. I hope it gets back around to me. And then somebody swipes them all up, and you're like, ah.
And Doug, so, I'm impressed that you've wanted a game that long and haven't yet acquired it.
Oh, I've got some self-control.
Hey, I gave you a compliment, man. You turned it into a backhanded insult. I'm truly impressed.
I have a very tiny
modicum.
Yeah.
Herbaceous, huh?
So that is Herbaceous. I like the original better than the dice version, which is Herbaceous Sprouts.
Interesting.
So that is my number one for games that make you think spring. Anything we missed? Anything on your honorable mention?
I brought two in on the honorable mention. You've already made fun of one of them, but Bonanza, 1997. planting beans, that could be a summer activity.
I tend to
think of it as spring.
Do you harvest those in the spring?
No, plant, Doug, the opposite of harvest.
You put them
in the ground.
But you don't score until you harvest them.
And that game is long enough where sometimes you can plant and harvest. But we love Bonanza in our house. The other one I just played recently with you, Morels, M-O-R-E-L-S. But you're trying to get some mushrooms.
You're hunting mushrooms.
And that's
on Kickstarter right now.
No way.
Yeah, there's a new version of that. Well, I don't even know if it's a new version. It's just a reprint. I think it's been out of print for a little bit. So the only one that was on my honorable mention is a game called Seasons. But it was one of the first that I thought of, but I think it goes too far into the fantastical realm a little bit too fantasy heavy.
10th anniversary.
Yeah. So I don't need to upgrade my copy, but Michael's going to get it. All right. Well, that is our our high five
games that
make you think spring. Yeah, you already backed it. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. We want to remind everybody to subscribe. If you haven't, you'll get notified whenever a new episode comes out, which is 10 a.m. Central Standard Time on Friday mornings. And like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at GameSchoolerU. And thank you so much for spending the last last hour with us or so. We appreciate it.
Now get out there and start game schooling.